Today on the Undivided podcast, the deeper implications for Johnny Depp's defamation lawsuit against actress Amber Heard.
I was broken and really just at the end, just at the end.
What it says about the cancel culture climate and about how media frenzies can result in a lack of critical thinking.
My children couldn't escape the fact that all this had gone down.
Plus, voter intimidation or savvy politics? We talk about a new hotline being set up to harass signature gatherers in Washington state.
Thanks for calling. Please let us know where you saw a signature gatherer for I-1929, the tax cut for the super rich.
Thank you to the founding sponsor of Undivided, 1530 Mortgage. Visit them at 1530mortgage.com. Welcome to the Undivided podcast. I'm Brandi Cruz. Happy Friday to all of you. I had been bemoaning the wall-to-wall media network news coverage of the defamation trial of actress Amber Heard. Johnny Depp, of course, suing her for defamation over a 2018 op-ed where she accused him, not by name, but it was obvious who she was talking about, of domestic violence. And he's saying it ruined his career, it ruined his reputation. Why I had been bemoaning media coverage of it is because there are so many other things going on. And I'm up, you know, watching Fox or Fox and CNN, everyone across the board was guilty of this. And they'd have it on for 20 minutes at a time. I'm thinking, okay, gas prices, inflation, all of these things happening in our country and abroad. And this is really what news networks are choosing to focus on. But I think more and more as it's gone on, I didn't really consider the societal implications of this trial and how what Johnny Depp is doing in suing Amber Heard for defamation is a check on cancel culture and the real danger of falling into too far into these trends of like the Me Too movement, for instance, which is really what Amber Heard's op-ed came during the height of. And after that, you know, people would come out and say, believe women. That happened with Brett Kavanaugh. If you remember the Supreme Court confirmation hearing with Brett Kavanaugh, how he had been accused of this inappropriate behavior all the way back in college. And there were so many people on the media circuit who were full in on that. And it was this believe women narrative. And look, I do believe that if a woman comes forward and says she's been victimized or sexually harassed or sexually assaulted, that she's worth listening to. And I do believe that the vast majority of women who have told those stories are telling the truth. But another truth is that some women are liars. I mean, that's just the crux of it. And so this idea of believe women no matter what at all costs doesn't make any sense because you're basically telling people, oh, you can't be a critical thinker. Go with the Me Too theme and believe women and you can't dare question any of it because then you hate all women. And the media gets into these sayings and really grabs a hold of them where you have to use a phrase in a certain way or you're evil. You know, the Me Too is one of them. And then also the Black Lives Matter movement and the phrase Black Lives Matter. And the whole drama over if somebody would say all lives matter, they would be immediately labeled racist where somebody was like, well, all lives do matter and all lives include black lives. But it was like, if you didn't use the phrase exactly as intended. And with the Me Too movement, I had come out during that period of time shortly after the Harvey Weinstein thing. And on my Facebook page, I told the story about a former employer who made some sexually explicit remarks and actions directed at me. And my purpose in telling that story was that HR departments, I really feel like, are to blame for allowing some of the workplace harassment to exist. And when I shared that, I didn't really care if anyone believed me because I knew that I was telling the truth and I didn't share it to like be believed. I just shared it to demonstrate a problem that corporations were dealing with and are dealing with, probably to a lesser extent. But even having gone through something like that myself, and there's a lot of women who have gone through some form of sexual harassment in their lives, I still don't automatically believe every woman who tells a story like that. Yet during the Me Too movement, if you were to come out and say, well, I don't believe her, or if you were to say, oh, the woman accusing Brett Kavanaugh, there's just not enough evidence of it to cost him a Supreme Court nomination all these years later. Oh, don't say that because then you hate women. Again, it's the media and talking heads on the media. They want you to lack critical thinking skills. And so that's why you're vilified when you dare to question anything. And so when Amber Heard did this op-ed in 2018, people believed her, and that was the narrative in the media. And Johnny Depp was really painted as this awful, awful guy and didn't have any room to be able to defend himself and to defend his character, because the media had gotten people so swept up in this Me Too movement and in, you know, empowering women, which, again, I'm not saying it's a bad thing to empower women to come forward when something awful has happened to them. But that doesn't mean that we have to throw critical thinking out the window and just ruin people's lives without any questions or any evidence whatsoever. And so when I really actually take some time to consider the implications of this defamation trial, do I believe that it should be played for 20 minutes on end on CNN or Fox? No. Do I believe that it should be covered? Yes. And I also think it has the potential to show that there are consequences to cancel culture. There are consequences when we blindly believe everything because we're being convinced that we have to. We're being guilted into or pushed into buying into a certain narrative. And in that sense, it's a very brave thing that Johnny Depp is doing to say, no, I'm not going to be canceled over something that didn't happen. I'm not going to be shamed into silence. I'm going to sue her, even knowing that this defamation trial was going to be very public. And that's fair. He was defamed in a very public way. And I'm giving my opinion there. I do believe that everything we've seen in the trial makes it pretty clear that Amber Heard made these things up about Johnny Depp. But he was defamed in a very public way. And so now he is pushing back against that in a very public way. So I hope that it can convince people not to be so quick to judgment, to use critical thinking skills, to understand that just because there's some slogan on the internet doesn't mean you can't question it or that you have to use it blindly. And it's why Nick Sandman's lawsuit against CNN, for instance, was so important. Nick Sandman was that teen caught on this viral video who appeared to be trying to intimidate an older Native American man at the Lincoln Memorial in 2019.
We are hearing from a Native American elder and Vietnam War veteran speaking to CNN after a disturbing viral video shows a group of teens harassing and mocking him in the nation's capital.
And the media and the internet and me personally were so quick to jump on this and be like, oh my God, what is this kid doing? Like, what a little punk. And then it turned out that the clip was totally out of context and he was the one being intimidated. So Nick Sandman turned around and sued CNN, got this gigantic settlement over it. And that was a lesson. Obviously, it wasn't a lesson that stopped some of this jump to judgment behavior, but it was a lesson, I know, to me to say, okay, you know, remember, Brandy, that some things are edited out of context and you really need to. And that's a lesson I'm still learning. You know, you see something, it's put out by a reputable source and you're like, oh my gosh. And you don't take a second just to pause. And I think that's true when you want to believe something. You know, people wanted to believe Amber Heard. They wanted to support Amber Heard and they did so at the expense of Johnny Depp. One fascinating revelation that has come out of this trial is the involvement of the ACLU, the American Civil Liberties Union. And this element is just sort of the poke in the eye for everyone who believed and supported Amber Heard and who vilified Johnny Depp. During the trial, Johnny Depp's attorneys played a part of a video deposition of Terrence Daugherty. He's the ACLU's general counsel. He was testifying about the fact that the ACLU was really behind Amber Heard's op-ed. Not only did they help to write it, but the ACLU was pushing for the release of the op-ed to be timed with the press around Amber Heard's movie at the time, Aquaman.
Mr. Johnson writes, since the draft turned out pretty strong and Aquaman slated to do large numbers, I'm wondering what you think about it.
So the ACLU wanted to capitalize off of existing press from a movie to, you know, have this op-ed put out there with Amber Heard's name on it that was going to destroy Johnny Depp's life, that they knew wouldn't be questioned because of the existing Me Too movement that had been fueled without criticality from the media. And it wasn't even about giving a voice to Amber Heard or helping Amber Heard share something to empower other women. It was about the ACLU getting attention toward its own causes.
To the extent that it is written by a public person who's an entertainer or a well-known person, that the more they are in the public eye at the time, the more likely it will be accepted by a more prominent or broader reach media outlet.
And this tie, this just gets even weirder, this tie between Amber Heard and the ACLU existed prior to this op-ed because after her divorce with Johnny Depp, if you recall, she made a big deal about, so she got $7 million in the divorce, and she pledged $3.5 million to the ACLU. So she made a big deal publicly about she was going to give $3.5 million of the money she got in the divorce to the Children's Hospital in Los Angeles, and then the other $3.5 million to the ACLU. And then the ACLU, it was revealed during this trial that they didn't even get the $3.5 million that Amber Heard made this big public show about donating. They ended up getting $1.3 million of the pledge that she had made. $350,000 of that came from Heard, and then $500,000 of it came from Elon Musk, who she had dated, and $100,000 actually came from Johnny Depp. So here you have the ACLU. It's promised all this money from Amber Heard, so there's money involved. They're helping her write this op-ed behind the drafts of the op-ed to put her story out there, knowing no one's going to question it, and they're doing it explicitly and admittedly to time it with the release of a movie to maximize exposure and maximize attention for their own causes. So again, not only is this trial a check on cancel culture, but it's also a reminder that these sort of movements, you know, Black Lives Matter, Me Too movement, when there's no critical nature around them, they can actually end up being very damaging. For instance, with Amber Heard making these allegations up about Johnny Depp, it makes it that much harder for women to be believed when you have women out there in a high-profile way making allegations that turn out not to be true. The same was true with actor Jussie Smollett, who pretended to be the victim of a hate crime in Chicago on the basis of his skin color and his sexual orientation. Turned out that he falsified the entire thing. It makes it harder for true victims of hate crimes to be believed. You know, I talk about the Black Lives Matter movement that really spurred this period where every freaking thing is racist. I mean, in Seattle, the fare enforcement is racist because activists say so. Bike helmets are racist because activists say so. And of course, nobody in the media is going to look at that critically because they don't want to be accused of being racist themselves. But when you call every single thing racist, that word, that heavy word starts to lose its meaning. I talked about this a little bit on the podcast last week, how if we can't walk this woke culture back from the ledge, I'm worried that things will go too far in the other direction, where everything's been called racist for so long that now nothing is racist, and people have been offended by everything for so long, and all of a sudden nothing's going to be offensive. And that's not where I want society to go. I'm sure that's not where you want society to go. And so we have to return to a place where we are allowed to think critically about issues and we aren't driven or guilted by narratives that are being pushed by the press. Coming up, voter intimidation or savvy politics. The Democratic campaign to stop a signature gathering effort in Washington state. But first, I want to talk about the founding sponsor of Undivided, 1530 Mortgage. And specifically, I want to have a conversation about cash out refis. This is something more and more people are considering. You know, one of the reasons there's a lot of conversations about cash out refis is that people, especially in the Seattle area, for instance, where I'm at, they have a lot of equity in their home. So they might want to take out cash to do a remodel, or they have some high interest credit card debt that they want to pay down. I spoke with Rich Hunt, the founder of 1530 Mortgage, about cash out refis and about who might benefit from one. Is it okay if you're somebody who's struggling financially to do a cash out refi to help you get by, or is that not a good use of that?
No, I would say it was probably the best use of it. It's a strategy that basically is going to let you get out of debt, and you're using your home to do that. It would be nice to save some money and put something away rather than give it to the banks and their high interest credit card debt.
So if you're interested in a cash out refi, or maybe you just have some questions about it to see if it's right for you, give my friends at 1530 Mortgage a call, 206-207-7777. Tell them you heard about them on the Undivided podcast. You can also visit them at 1530mortgage.com. 1530 Mortgage, NMLS ID 1761573, Equal Housing Opportunity. For informational purposes only, not an offer to extend credit. Credit approval required. Information and or dates are subject to change without notice. Not available in all states. Certain programs may not be eligible. Other restrictions may apply. One of the things that drives me nuts is when politicians think they know best, or they treat the public or treat voters like they're stupid. And that's something that's happening in Washington state right now. Yeah, that's a lot in Washington state. But there, the state legislature here passed a tax on capital gains, which has been very controversial because in Washington state, an income tax is illegal. And the IRS defines capital gains as income. And capital gains, of course, is the profit you get from an investment or from the sale of property. So in 2021, the state legislature passed a 7% tax on the sale of capital gains. And a lot of mostly Republicans were like, well, you can't do that. That's unconstitutional. Democrats did it anyway, denying that it was an income tax, and despite the fact that the IRS calls capital gains an income tax. So there was a lawsuit over it. And last month, the folks opposed to the tax on capital gains won the lawsuit. A Superior Court judge ruled that the capital gains tax as passed was unconstitutional, and so it's invalid. And of course, there are appeals and all of that is moving forward. Now, simultaneously, there is an initiative in the works to try to put the issue of capital gains to the voters of Washington state. It's called Initiative 1929. And what it would do if voters pass the initiative is to repeal the tax on capital gains. And then the lawsuit issue is a non-issue because voters would have spoken. So, of course, as part of any initiative process, you have to go out and you have to gather signatures. And I don't know if the folks behind this initiative are going to be able to gather enough signatures or have enough momentum, but the folks who are opposed to it have a very interesting strategy. They have set up a hotline that if you see someone out in public who is gathering signatures for Initiative 1929, you are supposed to call the hotline and report them. Okay? So you have people gathering signatures. Voters can make an informed decision whether they want to sign the initiative or not. But if you see that and you're opposed to the initiative, you're supposed to call this hotline. Let's call it quick, shall we? Let me call this quick. Let's see here. 509. I'm calling your hotline. Wow, not much of a hotline.
Thanks for calling. Please let us know where you saw a signature gather for I-1929, the tax cut for the super rich. Make sure to also tell us when you saw them, if they were paid or volunteer, if you could tell, and what they said to you. Thanks.
Yeah, I haven't seen any signature gatherers, but this is Brandi Cruz. I host a podcast called Undivided, and I was hoping somebody would talk to me about why you guys feel it's appropriate to send people out to take photos of people who are gathering signatures or people who are signing their name to the initiative. If you want to give me a call back or have somebody jump on the podcast, it is. Thanks. I guess we'll see if they call me back. So what exactly is the point of this? I guess, what are they hoping to do? So the chair of the Washington State Democratic Party, Tina Podlodowski, tweeted about this and said, "Friends, don't let friends sign petitions that give billionaires tax cuts and bankrupt our schools. Seven rich white dudes are paying for this initiative to get richer. Decline to sign, call the hotline." Okay, you can decline to sign, but what's the hotline about? What are they going to do when they report these individuals? Well, apparently they're going to try to dispatch teams to those locations to try to make it more difficult and more costly for these signature gatherers. This is a quote from Heather Weiner, who's a spokesperson for Invest in Washington Now, and they're opposing this initiative. She said, according to the Everett Herald, "We are going to make it as expensive and uncomfortable for them as possible. We will not interfere with them. We also want to make sure people have the facts." The Northwest Progressive Institute, which is sort of a progressive think tank, told people, "If you see a petitioner collecting signatures for this measure, please take photos with your phone and let us know using Permanent Defenses reporting system." That sounds like voter intimidation to me. If you're going and you want to sit and listen to what the signature gatherer has to say and decide, oh, if I want to sign my name, and you've got people taking photos of you, you got folks trying to make it, quote, as uncomfortable for them as possible. If that's not like the dirtiest form of politics, but it also going back to my initial thought, it is them assuming that voters are stupid and can't make up their minds for themselves. They want to say, we want to make sure people have the facts, and that's fine. But don't assume that people are dumb. There are a lot of people in Washington state who are going to want to sign that and who understand very perfectly what a tax on capital gains is. And all of it, the whole thing around capital gains, The IRS, that the IRS, the Internal Revenue Service, the authority on taxes in the United States, calls capital gains an income tax. But oh no, the Democrats in the Washington state legislature, they know better than the IRS. They say it's not an income tax, so they passed a bill despite income taxes being illegal in Washington state based on our state constitution. They passed it and they were confident it would stand up. Well, no, it didn't stand up in court. And then a judge ruled against it. Oh, well, we know better than the judges. We know better than the judges. Okay, there's an initiative to try to overturn it. No, we know better than the voters. We know better than the voters. So let's go out there and make sure that we, quote, make it as expensive and uncomfortable for them as possible if they want to oppose this tax on capital gains. Washington state is doing great economically. It has a budget that is getting more bloated by the day. Yet they are still, politicians, Democrats here, are still so desperate for more money to spend that they are willing to push through something that is clearly unconstitutional and to harass and intimidate voters in order to do it. That's about as low as it gets. Have enough respect in voters to make informed decisions for themselves. And have enough self-awareness to realize that you serve the voters. And if voters want to sign their name to an initiative and ultimately vote to repeal the tax on capital gains, have some respect for that process. I really hope that the folks behind this hotline shut it down and change course, because it is incredibly inappropriate for anyone from any side, for any issue, to go out and harass people who are engaging in a process that is codified by state law, and to harass voters who are exercising their rights just because you don't agree with their opinion on a particular political issue. And this is what's driving people away from the political parties, is tactics like this, is treating voters like they're dumb, treating voters like you know better. That's it for this episode of the Undivided Podcast. If you are one of my subscribers on Patreon or Locals, we have our live monthly Q&A happening tomorrow, Saturday at 7:30 p.m. So head on over to Patreon, patreon.com/undivided, or brandycruz.locals.com. You'll see that link there. So grab a drink tomorrow evening. I'm going to try it on a weekend because we always do them on weekdays. So grab a drink, whatever fits your mood, and bring your best questions and sit down and we'll chat for 45 minutes to an hour and I'll answer your questions as best I can. As always, thank you so much for listening and thank you for your commitment to helping to give common sense a comeback. And thank you to the founding sponsor of Undivided, 1530 Mortgage. Visit them at 1530mortgage.com.